Welcome to the Practice Made Perfect podcast. The episode you're listening to today was recorded before the COVID pandemic, but contains valuable information relating to those important non-clinical competencies we discuss daily in cardiology. We realize that the world we know today is very different than our world just a few months ago, but feel these topics will be even more valuable as we begin to negotiate the post-COVID practice of medicine.
Please join me in welcoming our guests on the podcast today. We have Dr. Ty Gluckman and Dr. Richard Chazal to discuss an area most of us need help with, time management skills. I'm going to introduce both of our guests, although for most of us in cardiology, they don't need introduction. Dr. Gluckman serves as the Medical Director of the Center for Cardiovascular Analytics, Research and Data Science, Providence Heart Institute, Providence St. Joseph Health in Portland, Oregon, as well as an adjunct faculty member of the Cicerone Center for the Prevention of Heart Disease at the Johns Hopkins University Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland. He's been involved in the ACC throughout his career, and we're very happy to have him today. Welcome, Ty.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Also joining us is Dr. Richard Chazal. Dr. Chazal is the former president of the American College of Cardiology. He's been very involved with the college throughout his years in cardiology. He currently serves as the medical director of the Heart and Vascular Institute for Lee Health and remains very engaged both professionally as a cardiologist as well as being involved with the college on both a national and state level. Welcome, Dr. Chazal.
Thanks, Allison.
All right. So thank you guys again for joining us today and sharing your experiences to make our lives more manageable. Let's start off by telling our listeners what your typical day or typical week looks like so we have some idea what you're juggling. Rick, would you like to start?
Well, I have a combined job that involves both administrative and clinical duties, as well as still being engaged, as you said, with things like the college activities. So a typical day for me starts with a review of data and emails very early in the morning. Often I'll have an early morning meeting for us in HVI. Our typical clinical meetings that we have on work groups start at 6:30 in the morning, so that we can get to work clinically, see some patients. And I sort of try and block it. So either by the day or by the portion of the day, I'm either seeing patients most of the time or I'm actually working specifically on administrative duties. And those kind of meld back and forth throughout the day. And interspersed with that are opportunities like the one that we're employing today to get to interact with colleagues on college activities or academic endeavors.
Okay, great. So that's wonderful. You do a little bit of different things every day, it sounds like, and definitely enough to keep most of us pretty busy. Ty, how about you? What's your day look like?
So my day is actually quite similar to Rick's in many respects. You know, over the years, I started out of fellowship as a full-time clinician, seeing patients every day of the week, and over the last at least 3 to 5 years, I've shifted to more non-clinical activities. I still see patients, and on those days when I see patients, it's a full clinical day. But my days are divided up usually as either patient care, patient-facing days, or non-clinical days overall. The reality, and I'm sure something that we're going to discuss more of, is patient care responsibilities get interwoven in our days when we're not clinically active, and how do you manage that? And similarly, some of the non-clinical questions come up, and I get peppered with emails while I'm seeing patients. I tend to be an early bird and start very early in the morning answering emails, getting work done, and, you know, we'll continue that into the early evening, but I try and maximize and take advantage of as much time during work hours where possible. I'm sure we'll also talk about it a little bit as well, but I'm on the West Coast, and a lot of my non-clinical meetings tend to occur sometimes in the early morning hours for the East Coast, and so it works out being an early bird on the West Coast for the most part, but I know we're going to touch on a lot of this today, but that's a rough idea of how I end up spending my days during the week.
Ty said two things that I think are helpful for all of us. One is that if you have administrative duties, if you're able to block off time for those instead of trying to shoehorn them between seeing patients, it's really, really important. So he's doing it by the day. I'm sometimes doing it by the day or by the half day. And not everyone has that advantage, but if you do, it's much more efficient than trying to do things on the run. And then the second thing that he said, he and I are the same, we're both early birds. You get a lot of work done very early in the morning before you get inundated by a lot of phone calls. And so I think some of the most efficient people I know are early birds.
That's perfect. That was really what my next question was going to be, is how do you prioritize your day? Now that we've heard how busy you both are and how you share these dual roles, where I think a lot of our listeners do now, it's not just being a clinician, but we have other responsibilities at the job. Any other last tips about strategizing your workday?
Some of us are list makers, and that could be in the form of a to-do list, usually starting with the most important things at the top. And some of us also use, depending upon the type of day we have, almost a priority matrix. So on a daily basis, it may be a list of six things that you need to be certain get done. But on a weekly or monthly basis, it may be a priority matrix that says these things are really important and urgent, or these things are less important or less urgent. That sometimes helps you create living lists that can help you prioritize.
And I know for Rick and myself, you know, we get involved in a lot of different things. And before you know it, if you're a responsive individual and you have often valuable information to share, before you know it, you may be inundated on your non-clinical days with lots and lots of meetings. And I think an important strategy also is to make sure that every meeting and everything that's competing for your time is valuable. You bring value to that meeting, that strategy session. If you don't, then it really shouldn't be on your schedule. And that's a skill that I think needs to be honed over time, because I initially sort of said yes to everything. And before you know it, your day can be inundated and you have no time to even get work done. So I think it's another strategy that takes time to realize what's frankly most important and what may be less important, or things could be very successful in spite of you not being a part of it.
To tag on to that, we were talking earlier, a year ago, Michelle Molden and I did a thing on this, and we talked about four rules for doing exactly what Ty said he does. And, you know, figuring out when do you say yes, and we asked, does the request fall within my area of expertise? Because if it doesn't, you may not be the best person to do it. What are the implications for care? Does it really focus on something that you're supposed to be doing? What are the time requirements, and therefore, do you have the bandwidth? And the last is, do I really have a passion for it? Because sometimes somebody asks you to do something, and you don't really have time, and it's not something you're interested in, and you're not as likely to do as good a job. You maybe should be spending your time doing something else.
Wonderful tips there, and as we move throughout our career. Rick, how do you find time to manage your role in professional societies like the American College of Cardiology? Do you use different strategies for prioritizing non-clinical tasks, or is it something similar?
Well, one of the advantages that I've had, but I've tried to develop this over time, is I've tried to integrate some of the things I've done in the college with some of the things that I do in my own system. And I've tried to leverage expertise to carry it both ways, from the college back to my home institution and vice versa. In doing so, I've actually gotten some degree of support from the institution when they've recognized the value of what I've done and have been able to work with them to carve out some time to actually spend on college activities. It turns out for me, that's been a lot of fun, and it also means that I'm able to do things I wouldn't be able to do. But I think the other thing is that the institution has realized advantages because they have somebody who's spending time focusing on this, particularly on strategic priorities long term.
Okay, great tips there. And then Ty, you know, we've talked about how we balance clinical work and non-clinical work, like administrative work and our professional society time, but where does research or quality analysis go into this hierarchy? Is it different?
Yeah, so I'm a little bit fortunate that part of my job that I have now is trying to build both clinical trial portfolio and promote and encourage our clinicians to be involved in investigator-initiated research. So I've been able to block out some of my time, but I think that that's a really, really important non-clinical activity that frankly in most places, including our own, doesn't allow for sufficient protected time. And what's the expression? Find the busiest person and give them one more thing to do. So we often find that some of our busiest, most productive clinicians are people seeking out research opportunities and other opportunities to build onto their non-clinical work, but connected with our institution. And so part of my job also at our institution is to try and find ways to make it easier to support those individuals, particularly where they don't have protected time. So I would encourage people, because I think that these are really important areas, whether it be focused on quality improvement, whether it's a focus on research, to try and figure out what resources may exist at your own university, medical center, hospital, or practice that can support you in doing this work. And if it isn't time per se, are there other people's time who can remove some of the pain points in participating in those activities to make your life easier and at least reduce some of the barriers to either entering or sustaining work in these areas?
I think that's great advice, and a lot of this really does have to be done on the local level, but there's no reason that it can't be woven into a successful clinical practice, sounds like what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, you know, I think recently, over the last 2 years anyway, we've learned so much about the importance of well-being and balance in our lives, and we know that physicians haven't always been the best at this. Rick, do you find that prioritizing personal responsibilities, things like family, philanthropy, fitness, anything outside of work, takes a different approach to be successful?
I think it requires scheduling as well. And while all of us want to have parts of our life that are spontaneous, there are some things that if you don't specifically plan for, they just don't happen. So, for example, fitness or spending time with one's spouse or children really does require, I think, some diligence and organization in terms of saying, I am going to make certain that I do these things on these days. And many of those are, I need to do these things every day. But I think of it as making certain that you're ensuring that you're taking care of yourself and your family. Otherwise, you're not good to your system.
And probably really building that into our expectations of what our career should be. Makes it more important.
I think if we do that, we extend our career longer than it might be otherwise as well.
I agree with that totally. Ty, do you have any other tips about personal prioritization?
No, I think Rick said this really well. I have a phenomenal wife, two fantastic kids, and you know, we find ourselves busy. And I think the house of medicine, the house of cardiology, it can be consuming for a lot of us. If we're a full-time clinician, it can be consuming. If we've interspersed some non-clinical activities or even disproportionately spend time non-clinically, it's really hard because it can take us away from a lot of those other areas that are as, if not, frankly, more important. I'm embarrassed to say this because I sometimes say, do as I say, don't do as I do, but I've learned over time that I need to block my schedule for activities. If it's a parent-teacher conference, it's going on my calendar that's actually in a red area that's a do not touch. And frankly, it requires some active management of my calendar and individuals who have access to my calendar to know that there are certain areas that are the third rail that they're not going to touch overall. Now, one would think that one would know this and be able to figure that out, but when a calendar is maintained, whether for clinical activities or non-clinical activities that many other people have access to, I'll find things added to my schedule that I didn't know about, and that's okay, but I think it then requires proactively managing your schedule to know that there's time blocked out, in particular for those other priorities that are really, really high, namely family. I will also say from a fitness perspective, in feeding off of the early bird theme, there is no way you could get me to work out in the afternoon or early evening because I am spent and that's not really an option. But for me, I get up and I will work out and I'm disciplined about doing it first thing in the morning and I tend to multitask as many of us do. So it may be reading a journal article, listening to a podcast, doing something else during the early morning hours while I'm also working out. That's how I sort of steal from one to feed the other. That's what works for me, and it energizes me for the day.
I think that's perfect advice, and I really like the fact that you said I prioritize my family first. It's the red category. It's the non-touchable. And I think we all have to begin to think of our lives as categories like this, and what's touchable and what's not touchable, and it probably changes from day to day. And obviously, as we move through our career and our life, our responsibilities change as our kids grow up or move out, as our job responsibilities change. What words of wisdom do you have for the fellow in training or early career physician to get a jump start on successful time management skills? Ty, you want to take this one?
Sure. So about a year into doing a lot more non-clinical activities, I started asking people around me, how do you get your work done? I have meetings throughout the day. I have all these activities. And then I find that I actually need to write, build presentations, prepare for things, and that all carried over into after hours. So I guess the biggest wisdom that I would say is talk to people who have been doing this for years and find out what skills they utilize to be successful. And to that end, I ran into several people who said, oh, I block time in my schedule. Again, easier said than done on non-clinical days, but it's really hard to do on clinical days. But on the non-clinical time, I put block time in my schedule where I have the ability to critically think, to be able to get work done, so it doesn't all carry over into after hours. And believe you me, individuals being built up with meetings, focused in on quality improvement, trying to do research, before you know it, everything will carry into after hours or weekends, and that's not fair to your family, it's not fair to you. So I guess my best bit of advice is talk to others who have gone through this to figure out what skills they have employed, and find time, if possible, to put blocks or breaks in your schedule so that you're not, if you will, robbing Peter to pay Paul, to put that time after hours or on the weekends.
Rick, do you think this changes once we hit mid-career? And have you learned any other additional tricks you'll tell us?
I think that for many of us who spent time training in cardiology or cardiac surgery or pediatric cardiology, that we reach a point in our career where many of the tasks, not all, but many of the tasks are relatively repetitive. That isn't to say that we shouldn't be paying careful attention to each and every individual patient. That's our obligation. But at the same time, many of these tasks are things that we've done thousands of times. And I believe introducing some variety into one's practice, expanding into areas that you've not thought about before, whether those are clinical areas or non-clinical areas to stimulate you, makes sense. And I think it melds well with one piece of the discussion that may resonate in a funny way with some of our listeners, and that is both Ty and I have talked about non-clinical time that we have blocked out. And really, most people don't have that. But if one looks carefully at a career as it evolves, at some point you can actually find that you can justify that some non-clinical time is actually more productive for your practice or for your institution than seeing patients 100% of the time. When you do that, you've exposed yourself to a different area of challenges and learning than you had before. And I think it can help keep you fresh and keep you interested.
To Rick's point, whether you're in a small practice, whether you are employed by a hospital or health system or part of a university, particularly as we shift into value-based reimbursement models, finding ways to drive and accelerate quality improvement for your practice, your hospital, your health system, trying to figure out how to learn better to run a practice that is operationally efficient, understanding the finance side. I think these are skills that often build off of passions or interests that people may have on their own. Seek out those opportunities. I think it provides a nice rounding out of clinical responsibilities. Even if you're 100% time clinical, those are opportunities that I would seize if you're presented with opportunities to take advantage of.
I totally agree, and I like learning new things. I'm a big fan of podcasts or blogs and books as a way to learn new skills and find new tools to make my life efficient. Have you found any resources you'd recommend to our listeners that are readily available?
So I honestly have been in situations where in my health system, I had the advantage for a brief period of time of actually having a coach. And that sounds strange. Most people think of coaches as being on the sports field. But, you know, coaching in healthcare is not a new thing, and increasingly we recognize that there are a lot of skills that we need to learn, whether it be time management or any number of other areas. And so I think if you ever have the opportunity in your hospital or health system to have access to a coach, they're a wonderful resource that can share a lot of valuable information involved in time management and beyond. And then to re-echo what I had said beforehand, I think it's finding people who you admire or have the sense of somehow have it all together. They've been able to balance a wonderful family life with a research career, with a clinical career, with other activities. Ask them, sit them down, grab a cup of coffee, a dinner, and say, how do you do this? Because I think, and Rick's brought this up several times, these are skills that can be mastered or, frankly, falter. And people who have been able to pick up small pearls, a number of pearls, string them together, can be really effective at better managing themselves. It's better for your own wellness in practice and beyond. And I think take advantage of individuals who you have a sense are really good at it. And if those people are transparent with you, they'll share with you what they do well and, frankly, what they need to do better on, because it's a continuously learning process to be able to figure out how you can get better at this skill or hone your skill over time.
For me, I got to say that exposure to the college or to any highly functional organization expands the number of people to whom you're exposed and gives you the opportunity to do just what Ty said. So for years, I've been learning from Ty and learning from you, Allison, and from many others that I come into contact with on a regular basis and continue to share information with not just people in my own practice or my own institution, but that are in geographically dispersed areas, but also in different types of practices or sometimes in different types of businesses. Some people are not clinicians. They may be researchers, or they may be peer administrators, or they may be working in a business sector. But there's really an opportunity to expand your sphere of people with whom you interact, and all of a sudden the resources start to become available, and you learn from them, gee, you need to read this, or you need to go to this meeting or see this. Also, the college's meeting, the summit, which just wrapped up this past weekend, is an excellent opportunity to interact with a lot of people who are expert in this area.
No, and Rick, you're very kind to say those words. I'm such a leader in the field. But I agree. You know, that's one of the reasons I've been very involved with the college, both on a local level and, you know, in the state, as well as on a national level. So I think you do get that opportunity to interact with other people and that are like-minded that you may not have just at home. When you've both had very successful careers, both clinically and in our professional society space, have you experienced career fatigue, and how do you address that? And if not, how have you been spared? Share your secrets with us.
So for me, I've been fairly fortunate. I have partially intentionally and partially by good fortune have evolved my practice over many years so that I've done different things, never always exactly the same thing. And even within specific fields, I've looked for ways to approach my practice or techniques or procedures differently, and then to evolve into a different type of practice that engages with quality improvement and cost reduction. And by doing that, each time I make that evolution, all of a sudden I have new challenges and new things that I have to learn or try and master, and am energized by that and energized by the new sphere of people with whom I'm interacting and trying to get that done. So I am theoretically at retirement age, but I love my job. I go to work every day looking forward to what's going to happen. And by not having to do exactly the same thing all of the time, and by trying to expand what I'm doing, it's really energizing and it's fun.
Well, and I would say that that carries over into all of your interactions, because that's exactly the impression you give off, that you love what you do, which is why we thought you'd be great to have on the podcast. Ty, how about you? Anything else to add?
I would say take advantage of the varied things that life gives you. That may be taking up a new hobby. It may be growing a new set of friends that you meet as a result of your kids. But as it relates to work, you know, healthcare is more dynamic in terms of the changes that are occurring than it's ever been before. And some individuals will say that that's, you know, a challenging thing, and it is, being very frank. But there are innumerable opportunities that will come up both in the clinical sphere and the non-clinical sphere as well. And so I have been asked to partake in activities within the college around advocacy, in lifelong learning, in science and quality. And my problem too often has been saying yes to everything, but if you're selective about it, even if it's something that you didn't necessarily know a lot about or didn't necessarily think you had a passion behind, take advantage of those opportunities that come to you. You will meet tons of different people that may be in the same area that you practice in. They may be in a completely different geography. You will learn things from them, and you, in some cases, will understand what you like and what you don't like. So I think one of the themes that Rick and I have both talked about in this regard is that we have avoided career fatigue because things have not gotten stale, and there's always something new that forces you to learn more, to learn from others, and I think that's what makes it exciting and fresh. So I do want to acknowledge there will be a limit to what I just said. Otherwise, you will drive yourself crazy. But if, in fact, you take advantage of those opportunities that are dealt, you will be exposed to a wide breadth of different things within the field of cardiology. And that's, I think, what keeps it really, really exciting and avoids the perils of fatigue.
I think that's great advice, keeping your mind open to new options. Well, you've both shared so many useful tips and strategies on time management with us today. Thank you again, Dr. Gluckman, Dr. Chazal, for being on Practice Made Perfect, and hopefully we'll all be more efficient as a result of this podcast.